Welcome to the Customer Service Gold Dust Podcast. This is the UK's only podcast where customer experience professionals share their journey, insights, challenges, and current focus in an ever-changing customer service landscape. My name is Gavin Scott, and I invite you to join us as we delve into another great conversation. Whether you want to increase customer satisfaction or decrease customer complaints, there's sure to be plenty of gold dust that will help you to stand out. Hello and welcome to the Customer Service Gold Dust Podcast. I'm your host, Gavin Scott. Now, today's guest used to be an actual, real-life, legitimate, award-winning rock star. He played guitar in a heavy metal band, released albums, and tore up stages all over the world. And he is now the CX evangelist at Pegasystems, where he researches extreme fandoms to understand how companies can create their own hyperfans. He shares those strategies through transformative training, engaging video content, and inspiring keynote talks. And in fact, he was awarded UK's number one CX influencer by the Customer Experience magazine back in 2020, the UK's most outstanding CX keynote speaker by Corporate Vision magazine in 2021, and the world's number 10 customer service guru by Global Gurus in 2021, and countless other notable mentions in industry publications like Business Insider, The Times, and Forbes magazine. Let's give it up for James Dodkins. Hello, James.
Hello. What an intro. I couldn't have written it better myself.
Do you know, I mean, when I was looking at this, I was thinking, wow, I mean, you've got some really great accolades, right? I mean, how does that make you feel?
It will. I mean, I only put the good bits in. So, no, it's really cool, actually. Like the industry recognition. You don't, when you're doing this stuff, you don't set out to achieve those things, but it is a nice little marker and it is a nice little nod to the work you are doing to try and, you know, take customer experience to a different place and to try and help the community as a whole.
Yeah, I love that. And that's the key thing. I don't know about you, James, but, you know, the stuff that I do, you know, A, I want to help people to have great conversations with their customers. And certainly with the podcast and the books and stuff, you know, it's about helping the CX community to get better as well. So I just love sharing great content. And that's why, you know, it's great to get people like yourselves onto the podcast today.
Yeah, man.
And you know what? There's been many, many of the guests who have mentioned you by name. If I think about it, we've had Gregory Uliano, who mentioned your name. We've had Jeff Sheehan, who mentioned your name. And in fact, recently I had a guy called Carl Sandland also on the podcast. And again, he mentioned you. So, James, clearly you're doing something that's having a massive influence on the CX community.
Yeah, it's called bribery. Sorry.
It works.
Checks in the post, guys.
Well, they were certainly singing your praise. So I thought to myself, if I can get James on, that'll be fantastic. So before we get stuck into some of the things that you do today, then, James, tell us a bit about your background.
So, as you said, I used to be an actual real life, legitimate award winning rock star, toured the world, released albums, was in magazines, had a video on TV. Then, after being an international rock god, I took the next logical step and I joined an insurance company. Worked my way through the corporate world, got made redundant from a job which has happened to many people. Turns out it was the best decision I never made. And I set out on my own. I started consulting and training. I got to work with some really cool companies. I worked with people like Disney, Lego, Adobe, Mercedes, Microsoft, IBM, like loads of really cool companies around the world, training their teams how to think differently and how to improve customer experience in replicable ways. And the issue was, I was sort of miserable, to be honest with you. I'd created this corporate persona for myself. So I never used to tell anyone that I was, you know, in a heavy metal band that toured the world. Apart from one woman I did tell. Right. And she was, let's say, an older lady, a lady of more mature persuasion. And so I was like, oh yeah, I used to play music. And she's like, well, what sort of music? And I was like, you know, like heavy metal. And she's like, I don't really know what that is. What kind of bands would I have heard of that play that kind of music? And because we were in Birmingham, I was like, Black Sabbath. And she was like, hang on a second. So you used to make money from being a devil worshipper. And I was like, no, you've got it all wrong. I didn't make any money. And she, I thought that was hilarious. She didn't. No. And after that, I just didn't tell people anymore. So I never told anyone about this cool music career that I had. I tried to create this corporate persona of what I thought you needed to be in the business world. And I was spending so much of my energy on any day just trying not to be myself. And it just wore me down. And around the same time, you know what it's like, the customer experience world was exploding. And I needed something to make me stand out a little bit and to be a bit more memorable. And I heard a quote from a guy called Jerry Garcia from the Grateful Dead. And that quote is, don't try and be the best in the world at what you do. Be the only person in the world that does what you do. And it hit me all at once. I was like, you know what? I can take this cool music career that I've had. I can take this love of customer experience that's grown organically over the years, and I can put them together, and I can talk to people about how to improve customer experience through the lens of music. So that's how I went from being a real life rock star to a sort of pretend customer experience rock star.
I love that, because not only can you then be genuine, sincere, and authentic, but you're fusing two passions together, both of which you love, and that in itself is going to come across in terms of how you show up, right?
Yeah, definitely. My wife was 2 months pregnant at the time with my first kid, and I said, right, I've got this idea on how I'm going to, you know, evolve the brand, how I'm going to take it to the next level. She's like, okay, tell me. I was like, right, I'm just going to be myself. And she was like, I don't really like you being yourself around the house. I don't think people are going to give you money for that. But it worked. She backed me 100% with it. And the deal was, I started making loads of video content, really to try and advertise the stuff that I was doing. And it turned into the fact that the video content and the speaking and that side of the business became more popular than the training and consultancy. So I kind of doubled down on it, and I decided that 2020 was going to be the year that I made most of the revenue in my business from keynote speaking.
Yeah.
leave that a little while to sink in at events that 2020 didn't have very many of.
When it all stopped in March. And so you set out to make 2020 your best year yet when it comes to keynote speaking. And so you obviously must have focused your attention on the videos and the YouTube, right?
Yeah, well, I was lucky that as everything was starting to close down, I was delivering a training course in London, and I used to bring a videographer around with me. So I got him to essentially film the training. So I got to film the training just before everything locked down, so I could put it online, which was actually really good, because it meant it gave access to so many more people than ever would have had access to it before. And then a lot of the keynote talks went online, so I really had to adapt, because it was a musical keynote. I didn't mention that. It was a musical keynote where I play guitar in it. There's all musical examples. So I had to really pivot. It turned out really well in the end. The training was super popular. Everyone really enjoyed it. Gregorio did the training. I know that. Carl did the training. Jeff hasn't done the training, but whatever, that's fine.
He speaks highly of you, though. He said to me, if you've not spoken to Jay, he was one of the first people who I interviewed on the podcast who mentioned your name, James. So he's definitely a key advocate of yours.
Wicked. There we go. But I had to pivot. There were loads of stuff virtually, which is more difficult. And it turns out people enjoyed it. And yes, it kind of got me this reputation as an influencer, which some people like, some people don't. Maybe that's a conversation for another day. I realized that I gained a lot from it, being able to, you know, help people learn about, help the masses learn about customer experience in new and fun and interesting ways. So yeah, I just kind of carried on doing that. So it was a bit of a blessing in disguise.
Yeah, love it. And before we have a look at some of the things that you do and the advice and support that you give, I'm sure there's many people listening, and maybe you've got a bit of an itch and they need a scratch, and they want to go solo. They want to maybe set up their own business, whatever that might be. And what would your advice be to them, James?
So basically, one of the biggest criticisms of the work that I was doing is I was all very well, it was really good at getting people inspired and ready to go. Yeah. But of course, I'd closed down the implementation part of what I was doing. because I wanted to do the inspiring stuff. So there was loads of criticism, like, okay, so yeah, you're inspiring people to go out and do it, but you're not actually helping them do it. And I'm like, well, it's fair enough. And then I got an opportunity to join Pegasystems, which is a software company. We do a lot of customer service software, a lot of marketing software, a lot of process automation software. And it was really a perfect marriage of taking the inspirational message that I want to put out there into the world, but also the power to make it happen. So I might be coming at this from a hypocritical angle, considering I now work for a corporate company who are amazing, by the way. But I think if you want to set out on your own, it has to be doing something that you love, and you have to be authentic while you do it. That's the only two bits of advice I've got, really. There's no point doing something that you don't love and believe in 100%, and there's no point doing it if you're not going to be yourself. So that was my disclaimer, but they're my two bits of advice.
Yeah, this is it. I'd certainly endorse that. I remember reading something that said, you know, I've never met anyone who is successful doing something that they really hate. But once you're passionate about something, that passion will absolutely, you know, drive you through to success. So it's definitely important to make sure that whatever you do, you're absolutely passionate about it, because that will help you to achieve success. And just thinking of having a conversation with you, just so you know, James, I'm also a football referee, right?
Okay.
And I've had a conversation with a few people, because this, you know, it seems to keep coming up. And I think there's an opportunity, you know, thinking about your story being this rock star and then fusing CX together. I'm just thinking that there's so much that I could do with refereeing and customer experience. I know that Gregory Uliano is the CX goalkeeper. So maybe that's something for me to have a look at in the future. What do you think?
I think definitely. So who do you support, like Runcorn Town?
Well, it's Runcorn Linnets is the team that's there. But because I was born and bred in the Northwest, you're either a red or a blue. And I'm a blue. I follow Everton. That was the first team that I went to watch. And the rest of my family were Liverpool fans. So I'm an Evertonian. That's my team.
Okay. Well, I'm a Villa fan, so sorry.
Yes, well, we were hoping to beat you at the weekend. And you're doing a great job with Gerard at the steering the ship right now, isn't it?
Yeah, man. Well, right. So interestingly, my very first book that I published in 2014, which is what, 8 years ago now, that was talking about a theoretical different way of organizing in business. So the deal is, the way that we organize, and I know you've got a whole load of questions that you were planning on asking, and I'm just completely derailing it, but welcome to a James Dodkins podcast. So the way we organize ourselves is very antiquated. It's very outdated. It's an industrial age mindset. There was a guy called Adam Smith that was around very long ago in history. And he was a Scottish social economist. And he went into a pin factory in Scotland, and he saw that their output was largely dependent on any given day by the skill set of the people, the staff that were in. And he theorized, well, rather than just having people control the whole process of making a pin, and then you never really know how many pins you're going to get, why don't we split up the tasks involved in making a pin and then train people to just do that one specific task really, really well? And that created the division of labor. And that was written about in a book called The Wealth of Nations, where supposedly this pin factory improved their output by about 24,000%, which, I'm not a mathematician, but that is a lot of percent. And yeah. A lot of people adopted this as a model for economic growth. That book was published in 1776.
Wow.
And that model created the pyramid that we organize ourselves in nowadays. You had little areas of the production. So you had like the extrusion area, you had the sharpening area, the packing area. Then you'd get managers managing each part of that, all the way up to the CEO at the top. And in this situation, the CEO was the chief pin maker. They were the person who knew the most about making pins. Now, we don't need to answer this, but I will ask you the theoretical question anyway. In your organization, is your CEO the one that knows the most about the daily goings on of your organization? Yeah, I mean, I'm not going to answer for you, but in a lot of cases, the answer is probably no. But back in the day, that wasn't the case. They knew everything. And it was a massive departure from traditional manufacturing, where you'd have master craftspeople who would make a chair. They find the tree, they cut down the tree, they bring the tree back to the workshop, they plane it, they cut it, they do it all, they make the chair, they sell the chair, they service the chair, they do everything themselves. Whereas in this world, it was a case of, look, you sharpen pins. You don't need to know anything about any of the other parts of the process. Just do that and do it well. Don't ask questions. The person above you tells you what to do. The person below you, you tell what to do. And that is literally the model that we use to this very day, this pin factory structure in a pyramid. Nothing has changed in over 250 years. My theory is we should maybe move away from that. What we have created is chaos, essentially, where departments tend to only care about the success of their departments. It's kind of like, to use another analogy, so this is like Inception, it's like an analogy within an analogy, like a Rubik's Cube.
So like a nested loop. We open up all these different loops and then you're going to sew it all together for us at the end, right?
Yeah, I take you on a journey.
Come on.
Unless I just don't sew it up at the end and it's loop. But so this Rubik's Cube, imagine that every department in a company is a different color on a Rubik's Cube. So you've got the red department, the blue department, the yellow department, the whatever other colors are on a Rubik's Cube department.
White.
And they get given their tasks. And they get told, look, we only care about the completion of one side of the cube, and that's going to be in our color. So blue department, you need to get 9 tiles together on one side. Red department, you need to get 9 red tiles together on your side, and so on and so on. And the person who's passing this down, probably the chief pin maker in this sense, the boss, is there going, well, that makes a lot of sense, because if each person focuses on their own color, I will end up with a completed Rubik's Cube, which is the goal that I want to achieve. But the problem is, as the blue team are working away to try and get their blue side, they're messing up everyone else's work. As the red team are doing it, they're messing up everyone else's work again. That's the environment that we've created with this pyramid structure that we work within. So my theory is we could do it a different way. And this is organizing around experiences and organizing around, wait for it, the customer. And I use a football, and this is why I'm telling you this. I use a football analogy for it. So there are 3 questions you can ask of a football team, which I will ask of you now. So in a football team, who is the customer?
The fans are the customer.
Yeah, well done. Now, I've had some weird answers with that before where people go, the manager is the customer. No, the referee is the customer. No. In this sense, the referee is the regulator, but that's a conversation for another day. The football's the customer. No, you are correct. The fan is the customer. Fans. So the next question is, when the fan goes to watch the team play, what is their successful outcome?
If the team wins on the day, right?
Yeah. Ultimately, there's loads of other stuff around it, satelliting it. Like you want a fun experience. You want to see a good game. You want the environment to be clean and tidy. You want good drinks, good food. But ultimately, the outcome they want to achieve is see the team win the game. So then wouldn't it be crazy for the manager just to put 11 goalkeepers on the pitch?
Absolutely.
That's what we do in business. What the manager does is they understand this is the customer, this is the goal we need to achieve. So they put a team together of different skills and different core competencies who are best suited to delivering that outcome to the customer. That's the way I think we need to think in business. Understanding who is our customer, understanding what is their successful outcome, and then putting teams together of different skills and different core competencies together that will work best to deliver that outcome. So that was a long way of telling you that I once wrote a book about a theoretical new way of organizing that was based on a football analogy.
So the first question was, who's the customer?
Who's the customer?
The second question was, what do those fans want? How do they know they've been
successful? It's not what they want. It's different to what they want. So, like, to give an example, you got kids. You got three girls, you say.
I got 2 girls and a boy, yeah.
Two girls and a boy. Well, good luck to you, mate. What ages are they?
My son's 14 and my girls are 9 and 10.
Okay, so let's take the 9-year-old. If you ask the 9-year-old, what do you want to eat for dinner? What's she going to say?
Chicken nuggets every time.
Yeah, you're going to get chicken nuggets, burgers, chips, gummy bears, cookies, all on top of a pizza. And the problem is, when you ask, what do you want? You create an expectation that you're going to fulfill what it is that they've said that they want. But also, if you give them what it is that they want, they might be happy in the moment, but you're never going to achieve that successful outcome. And that's the difference. You understand what it is that they actually need. they need a healthy, balanced diet. And of course, there's different arguments as to what that is, but it's probably likely going to be meat and vegetables. That's the stuff they're going to need to grow up healthily. But that's because you understand the outcome they need to achieve. So it's a different mindset. It's not asking customers what they want or giving them what they want. It's about understanding the outcome they need to achieve and then giving them the things that they need to achieve that outcome. Does that make sense? There was another analogy in there for you.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely makes sense. And it's, you know, that's the key thing, isn't it? It's about focusing on their requirements and delivering against what their aspirations are. That's what's important for the customer, right?
Yeah. And so in the terms of the football thing, the fans might want to see a beautiful game where there's overhead kicks and seamless passing. But what they really need is the strategies and the plays that score the goals that win the game.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like the old Newcastle. Do you remember that? And it was Keegan used to say, well, we'll just try and score more goals. And that's why they ended up, you know, winning games like 5-4. But occasionally they'd lose, you know, 6-4. So yeah. They played beautiful football, but sometimes, you know, it wasn't consistent in terms of winning the league. You know, that it wasn't, and I don't think they managed to achieve that. But was there three questions to the football knowledge?
Yeah. So who's the customer?
Yeah.
What's the successful outcome? And then what team is going to deliver that successful outcome?
Great. Okay. And so going back to the Rubik's Cube analogy then, from the time that you spent, you know, doing consultancy and whatnot with companies, often sales, marketing, customer service absolutely are working against each other, or they don't even know what other departments are doing. And that just causes a lot of issues overall when it comes to the customer experience, right?
Yeah.
And so when it comes to the stuff that you advise and the work that you do, James, what are some of the key things that you feel will help to create exceptional customer experiences, especially in the current landscape?
I mean, there's loads of things, but in keeping on this topic, this idea of like cross-functional teams is a really interesting one to look at. How do we put teams together that have got some salespeople in, some customer service people in, some marketing people in there, some IT people in there? How do we put a team that works together to which and is, you know, targeted and bonused on the achievement of that goal, even though traditionally they would all be in their own little departments and they'd never talk to each other? How do we put these teams together to best serve the customer? Because at the end of the day, how can you call yourself a customer-centric company if you don't organize around the customer, if the customer's not even on the map? And that's the thing. This pyramid structure that we used to use, well, and still do use mostly, the customer's not even on there. The customer's not even on the map. And what we do is we treat this pyramid as if it's like a blueprint. Like if you think of any building you've ever been in, an office block, you've got the people at the bottom, usually the call center people doing the customer service, actually engaging with the customers at the bottom, like they are on the pyramid. And then you've got the people at the top, at the very top of the building. And it makes people look at this and go, well, hang on a second. I'm in the middle there. They're the ones that talk to the customer. I don't talk to the customer. The customer's not my job. We've created an environment where the majority of people within our organizations think that the customer isn't their job. And I think that's a problem. I think we do need to change that model to organize around the customer so that everybody can see how what they do on a daily basis contributes towards that delivery of customer success. But of course, the first step is understanding who the customer is and then discovering, well, what is that successful outcome that we are all here to work together to achieve?
And certainly from some of the companies that I've worked with, James, and I'm sure you've experienced this yourself, there's often a bit of a back office culture where people say, well, I'm not actually customer facing, Gav. You know, I don't interact and engage with the customer. And I'm like, well, everything that you do is ultimately going to have an impact on the external customer.
Well, it's a really good point. And I think this is a big lesson that so many people need to learn in business. Just because you're not customer facing doesn't mean you're not customer affecting. Every single thing you do in business will affect the customer in some way. And probably one of the biggest gifts that leadership can give to these people is that line of sight, that vision to see how the work they do on a daily basis positively impacts customers' lives. There are so many people working in organizations, long hours, day in, day out, that never get to see how their products or services actually affect customers' lives. I think it's a brilliant thing for leaders to be able to do, to allow them to see that, give them that line of sight, give them that visibility to know how the work they do, how it's positively changing the lives of people around the world.
reminds me of that story with JFK when he was doing his rounds of the corridors in NASA. And he said to the janitor, didn't he, what is it that you do? And he says, I helped put man on the moon. And if you think about it, if people had a clear view and clear line of sight of the impact that they can have on the overall customer experience, then at least they feel as though they can make, you know, a positive contribution, and everything gets, you know, what they do matters.
Yeah, because there are really only two roles in organizations. You either help the customer or help the people that help the customer. That's it. And it should be that simple. Two layers, two levels. And if it were that simple, people would understand a lot more about, it's kind of like, take it back to the football analogy, the doctors, like the physicians and the physiotherapy people that work for a football team. They understand, because they're working on the players, that they are getting the players into the best health so that when they go out onto the pitch, they can perform the best they can so that they have the greatest chance of winning the game. There's a very clear line of sight there. They understand that they're not just making someone's leg feel better for the fun of it. They're doing it for a reason, because there is that alignment. Everybody, the cooks, they understand that they're cooking the food for the football players to make sure they are in peak physical condition and in peak health, so that when they go out onto the field, they have the best chance of winning the game. Everybody understands, and everything everyone does is aligned towards that successful outcome. And I'd love to see more companies doing that.
Absolutely. And if you think about the landscape within which we live in today, then James, you know, if we get this right, and there's a real clear focus and a real line of sight, what's going to be the impact for organizations?
The impact for customers is you'd probably be getting better experiences more often. The impact for the companies is going to be more money. I don't know, it's a bit reductive, but that is what it is. It's one of those things, you will have heard all the statistics and everyone saying it time and time again, but it does seem to be the case. The companies that deliver better customer experiences end up outperforming financially the ones that don't. So that's the, it doesn't matter. Like, you can be really selfish with it. You can run a company and not want to make people's lives better. You might just want to make a stack of money. Okay, whatever. But the way you do that is by making people's lives better. It's, for me, it's a mindset change with that. It's, the money isn't the goal. The money's the reward. The goal should be the achievement of that successful outcome. The goal should be making people's lives better. And I think when you switch that mindset from the money being the goal to the money being the reward, that's when it starts to happen. And that's when things start to look after themselves. Does that make sense?
It does. It reminds me of some of the content that I read from Dan Pink's book, Drive. And he talks about, you know, there's always a higher purpose. Yes, you know, money is a motivator, but there's always a higher purpose. And if you can connect people to that higher purpose, then they're going to contribute their best efforts. So it absolutely, you know, makes sense for those people who certainly who are purpose driven in that context. And so, and I know both of us, we've mentioned our kids and stuff, and the two of us have got to collect our young ones from school. So let's see if we can bring this one to a head then. So in terms of your gold dust, then, what would be your top tips for listeners when it comes to creating exceptional customer experiences, James?
To pick just one thing is fairly difficult. But I think what I will say is, so earlier I mentioned about not asking customers what they want. Some people misconstrue that as me saying don't talk to your customers. And that's actually the opposite of what I'm saying. So my gold dust is talk to your customers. Just talk to them as much as you can, as often as they can. And I'm not talking about surveys. I'm talking about actual conversations, actually understanding their lives and who they are as people, their values, their behaviors, their lifestyles, their personality, their influences. Really try and get such a deep connection with your customer that you know what they need before they even know it for themselves.
Love it. Great advice. So folks, talk to your customers, really talk to your customers, have conversations with them. And by doing that, you'll be able to answer some of the unasked questions and deliver, you know, what they need before they even realize it themselves. James Dodkins, it's been great to have you on the podcast. Thanks for your time today. And I look forward to speaking to you again one day.
Cheers, man. Thank you for having me.
You're more than welcome. Take care. Thank you for listening to the Customer Service Gold Dust podcast. I'm sure that there were plenty of ideas you can take away and apply to your business today. Three things to do now. Subscribe to the podcast so that you can benefit from every episode. I'd also love to see a little review as well. This helps to spread the word and the gold dust, of course. Head over to Amazon to get a copy of my latest book, Finding Gold Dust: How to Create Exceptional Customer Experiences. The book is endorsed by a former executive vice president of Walt Disney Resort. And finally, visit my website at www.gavinscott.me and sign up for some more free content. Until next time, stay memorable.